Welcome to the Golf Betting System Podcast 71. This is our 2019 RBC Heritage Show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour Previewer at Golf Betting System. And with me, we have European Tour expert Paul Williams and long-standing podcast pundit Barry O'Hanrahan. Good morning to you both.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
We've got the post Augusta Blues, I'm afraid.
Well, it shouldn't have really. It was a cracking event. Not quite from a betting perspective as we'd have wanted collectively, but I think we managed to scrape a little bit back and see.
You might have done. I scraped absolutely jack shit back from two blokes that could have won.
Yeah, I think you could argue the same about many of the players there. Coming down the stretch, there was a number with a chance, wasn't there? But
how Ricky and Cantley didn't have the decency to finish in the top eight, I'll never know. But I must say, we'll forget about the intro. We'll do that in a minute. But yes, I think from a viewing perspective, it's probably the best major I've ever watched. It was unbelievable stuff. It was intense, wasn't it? For about an hour.
An hour? I mean, the front nine kind of bubbled along with Molinari and his ups and downs, and you could kind of feel something was coming, like, you know, no pun intended, a storm was brewing, but it was more on the golf course and what was coming in the afternoon. Mm. And I was just texting some friends saying, I think the back nine's going to light up, and my God, did it. It was absolutely phenomenal. That it's so hard to put it in perspective because we're only 2 days out after the event, but genuinely, that could have been one of the best majors we've had the privilege of seeing.
Can't disagree with that. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk is our website. Naturally, we're available on social media. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. You can follow me at Bamford Golf. Paul is available at Golf Betting. And Barry is available at A Good Talk Golf. Look out for the Golf Betting System YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. This podcast is available on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, and a myriad of different pod channels. You can also listen via our Golf Betting System YouTube channel. Naturally, subscribe and follow the podcast, and please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. And as we do every week, I will read them out at the start of next week's show. Leave your name in the review so we can read it out on the podcast. We haven't got anything this year, this week was.
Everyone focused on the Masters, I expect.
I think everyone was too into the Masters to be bothered to spend 10 minutes writing a review, and I don't blame them. But actually, that gives us far more time to talk about the Masters. I tell you what I've done. I took a couple of key things, you know, on the basis that I had two players that had a meltdown as soon as they had a sniff of winning. I've just brought up the official world golf rankings on my computer, and I was just casting an eye over the from the top down players that if they were in a major scenario where they're contending on the back nine, would you absolutely categorically 100% trust them to stay right in the hunt till the outset? And I've got Dustin Johnson at one. Well, I don't think you can kind of disagree with that. Justin Rose at two. I think when Rose gets in the mix, he tends to hang around.
Yeah, he knew he wasn't ever going to do anything last week after the way he started, and just kind of melted away, didn't he?
Koepka is just cast iron. He's an absolute major monster.
I know you were saying, Barry, that Koepka's virtually an auto bet for majors nowadays.
It's getting that way.
It should be. What was he, 25-1 this week? And he's won three of the last six majors.
And it,
or sorry, three of the last seven.
He doesn't need to show anything advanced. He just peaks.
Mm. Yeah.
McIlroy at four. I'm becoming a little bit grey when I see Rory at four. When was the last time he was actually in contention for a major? Was that Augusta last year?
Yeah, not much happened.
Went out in the final group?
Yeah, kind of just fizzled away that week, didn't it?
He missed that putt on the second last year. Yeah, that was the thing that just... He just needs momentum. Like, unlike any other golfer, he needs momentum. I don't know. He was in great shape coming into this. Arguably the best form of his life. Not streaky, just really consistent. Has a win recently. And I don't know what it is. Does he want it too much?
Yeah.
Yeah. He sprayed it on. I mean, that was the great thing about that Masters app. You could watch every shot. He sprayed his first tee shots straight right into the trees. Mm. And you're just thinking,
Yeah, but sometimes that settles you down. You get the bad shot out of the way, and you can move on from there. But no, he didn't, did he? And the mad thing is, the course, the way it was set up this week, absolutely perfect for him. You know, the way the conditions panned out, the form, as you said, Barry, how he's coming into the event with such cracking form.
He was pounding greens in regulation all the way up to the Masters. Mm. He was number one in my tracker. And I think in the end, he ended up at 61% GIR, where you got Tiger up in the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm just working my way through. I mean, Tiger Woods, what do you need to say? And then the one that I really took from last week was Xander. I mean, that guy, again, he's cut from some very, very serious steel, I think, Xander.
Yeah.
When he gets to the top of a tournament, and the top of a major leaderboard, you just know he isn't going to fall away.
No, he looked really impressive. I invested
in
him.
He's so almost an auto bet, isn't he, in the major?
Yeah. I mean, I've got money on him, so, you know, I'd watched him quite intensely. And from a slow start, he, you know, the Friday round was outstanding, the best round of the field. And where it went wrong for him, actually, was the 11th on Saturday. And it sounds mad because he actually made a par at the 11th, which is, the toughest, or one of the two toughest holes on the course. But he hit an incredible shot in there to about 4.5 feet, missed the putt for birdie. And went to the, made birdie at the 13th, as you'd expect. Went to the 15th, banged it again down the fairway, 320 off the tee. 210, 205, something like that, into the 15th. And as you see so many times, if they come up just marginally short in the water, another 2 feet, another 3 feet, whatever, he'd have bounced on the green, giving himself an eagle chance. Instead, he makes bogey. And from there, it's just, you know, it's a tough old ask, isn't it? And fair play to him, as you said, you know, on Sunday, he showed real balls to get himself back into the mix, into the lead, into the outright lead at one point. You know, just couldn't quite, you know, because it was a couple of holes ahead. It's a bit misleading, that back nine round Augusta, isn't it? Because you know there's a big opportunity on 13. You know there's a big opportunity on 15. On Sunday, if you get the you get your iron right going into 16, you've got a big birdie opportunity on 16 as well. So if you're a couple of holes ahead, but you know, on the same score, even one ahead, it's not necessarily the you're not necessarily ahead of the game altogether, but. He showed, you know, I was massively impressed with him. You know, even those par putts coming down the last couple of holes, really good. So, yes, he's got to be one to keep an eye on, I think, for the forthcoming majors. Regardless of his incoming form, he loves it when it's tough. He loves a major test, I think.
I'll have to do some more digging into what he's like on Poana. He's actually a California chap, isn't he?
Mm.
So you would assume that Poana shouldn't be too big a deal for him.
Yeah.
But clearly you've got Beth Page in a few weeks' time. That's long. I think they're Poana greens. They might be mixed with bent grass, which would suit him more.
Yeah, from memory, they'll mix bent power. But yes, you know, it demands good driving. He's a cracking driver of the golf ball. And he's got that major mentality, isn't he?
I think pebbles are a lot more specialised, isn't it? And that is, they're really nasty, nasty Poana greens.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about Dustin Johnson for Beth Page, but Dustin Johnson at Pebble, equally, he's got to be, you know, he's going to be very, very well fancied, isn't he? Particularly after this week, you know. Augusta's never been his happiest of hunting grounds, but he wasn't far away either, was he? That top of that leaderboard at the end was outstanding.
The quietest tied second ever, Dustin Johnson, this week.
Yeah.
Just zero fuss. Mm. What do we say about Tiger? I mean, clearly he's going to be in the mix in Bethpage and Pebble on this trajectory.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for certain. I think it's worth taking a second to talk to her. I think what that guy's done to win his last major in 2008 at the US Open and then to come back in 2019 after all of his whole ups and downs of life and the physical issues that he's had of late is, I think, is one of the greatest sporting achievements I've ever seen, if not the greatest. I mean, that is saying something as well. It was phenomenal, wasn't it? And he closed it out with the minimum of fuss. It was just like watching him in old. There was no danger that he was going to lose that once he actually hit the lead.
No,
he did exactly what he needed to do on every shot.
Apart from the approach on 18, which went a little bit wonky to keep everyone interested for a final couple of minutes.
He was too.
I think he's.
Yeah.
He had a mud ball. I think he said. Is that correct?
Mud
ball. Yeah. So and you know what? He like the pro he is, or like the genius he is around Augusta, he missed in the right spot. He gave himself a very accessible pitch shot to get it onto the green and give him two putts. Yeah. It was some performance. I mean, the focus he had all day long, and he was giving the guys the stares and the intimidation factor, and I thought one of the most impressive swings I saw him put on the ball all day was his tee shot on 17.
Yeah.
It was so free. It was such a free swing, and it kind of reminds me of what Jeff Ogilvie was saying on the Fried Egg podcast. You could still go back and listen to that now. It's a timeless one about the Masters. And he was saying you need to be able to swing it as free as possible around there, even though the shots are so hard. And that swing was incredible on 17.
He banged it past Fee now, didn't he? he just absolutely laid into it.
Yeah.
That was one of the things you never quite could get your head around with Tiger, whether he still had that freeness to actually get the driving distances that you need for somewhere like Augusta. So that's a tick in the box. It was a phenomenal view, really.
Oh, was it? Yeah, and the outpouring of emotion at the end, there with his family, with his little boy. It's great to see. I mean, there's some people who clearly they have a massive Tiger lovers. There's a number of people who have been quite negative about him since all of the personal life stuff came out. But if you can put all of that to one side and just look at the spectacle that we saw on Sunday, then you can do nothing but applaud. I don't think really good.
No, it was top notch stuff. I thought.
Mm.
I got very excited when Cantlay eagled 15.
Oh my God!
I was screaming at the TV. And my son didn't. He got upset. He didn't realise what Daddy was getting upset about. But then he realised that when I was getting upset, when he started spraying it from that point onwards, he realised another kind of upset.
The full range of emotions from Dad.
Interested for Cantlay. I mean, he's clearly a phenomenal talent. That's his first major top 10. It won't be his last. He's got the game for a major. But and I said this in the podcast for the picks podcast a couple of weeks ago. It's just that case of because he hasn't got that experience in the hottest of heat, that's going to just come over time, I think. So, you look at it from a, oh my God, he's just cost me a lot of money perspective. Actually, I think it was a decent performance from Cantlay, all told. And just to throw it in there, Tiger topped greens in regulation again.
Yeah.
So, it's only Patrick Reed that threw that one out last year when he was 21st for GIR. I think Tiger was first, Sergio was second. And it just goes back and back and back. It's just greens and regulation, Augusta.
Yeah.
That's the ball game.
That's going to be, as you say, 80, 90% of the time, that's going to be the absolute critical factor on the week.
And if I remember correctly, Tiger and Schauffele and DJ were all in the top five of my GIR tracker.
Mm.
So, yet again, that's something to bear in mind for next year.
Yeah.
Well, we just it's interesting if you read out the top few in greens and regulation and where they came on the leaderboard. So you've Tiger Woods, Justin Thomas, Ian Poulter, all great results. Adam Scott, if he could putt, he'd be fine.
He just fell away
Victor
again,
Hovland.
Didn't he? Yeah. Fell away again. Yeah.
Matt Kuchar, Brooks Koepka, Trevor Immelman, Thorbjørn Olsen, Dustin Johnson, John Rahm, Xander Schauffele. you know, Fleetwood, Kisner, Day, you know, a lot. It's a big, there's a big, big correlation between greens and regulation and success at Augusta.
Here you go. I've just brought it up on my screen. McIlroy, this was my tracker. McIlroy 1, Tiger Woods 2, Xander 3, Dustin Johnson 5. And where did they finish?
Yeah, well, if you exclude Rory, then yeah, you could have made a tidy sum out of that, couldn't you, if you'd have just backed them blindly. Food for thought for next year, Stephen.
Yeah, I'm just going to... yeah, it's an interesting one. I am starting to reassess what I do. You know, we were talking about the par 5 birdie or better stat.
Mm.
Tiger was 30th going into it last week, and you look at it from last year, he was 11th. So there's kind of a correlation there.
Par 4 or par 5?
Par 4 birdie. Right, better, par 4. He was 30th this year, and then last season, total 11th. So he's in the top 11.
Yeah.
And that was similar. I think Adam Scott did a similar thing a few years ago when he won. He was in the top 10, I think, for the year before. So yeah. That just needs to be borne in mind, I think.
I think if Tiger continues on the trajectory he's on, then he'll probably be top 5, if not better, at that stat by the end of this season. You could look back historically and again infer the same logic, I think.
Who are you going to take at Pebble Beach? Are you going to take Tiger or are you going to take DJ?
Tiger will be about 5-1 at this stage for Pebble.
DJ loves Pebble, though, doesn't he?
And DJ is going to be 6-1.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But then you've got other players who love Pebble as well. You know, Phil Mickelson, is he really out of the equation at this point? He showed again last week. He loves Pebble.
Hmm. That's the thing, and it is going to be Pebble in June is nothing like Pebble in Feb.
Mm.
But it's going to suit a player with immense short scheme skills because it's going to be firm and fast. The greens are going to just be brown.
Yeah.
So actually, it becomes more of a kind of course plotter, short game exercise. It's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we wouldn't draw too many conclusions.
Maybe Paul Casey will contend.
Oh, Steve.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I just have to throw.
Have we finally given up on Casey? Have we in the majors? Come on, guys.
I never got to him in the official world golf rankings to discuss Paul. He's at 12 in the world.
Mm.
What did we make of John Rahm?
Yeah, quietly impressive, I think.
He had 4 rounds under par. Yeah. You're not doing an awful lot wrong, are you?
In the right conditions, I think we touched on this last week. The right conditions for Augusta, I think John Rahm will be very, very close to winning a green jacket at some point in his career.
With us on Fowler and Cantlay and virtually the whole betting world on John Rahm, they all finished 9th?
Mm.
Painful.
I'm so glad I took those guys to, each way top 10.
I wish I had.
And then, do you know what? That one of my ghosts of the past, Webb Simpson, came back to haunt me again, who finished like a train and instead of being in a tie for 8th, ended up jumping up one more spot and left the boys in a tie for 9th, which meant they got cut in, my each way payouts got cut in 2/3. So Webb Simpson has a history of screwing me over. Did it to me in the US Open Olympic Club against... Well, no, Harrington kind of screwed himself over in that, but I still blame Webb Simpson for it.
Yeah. Got to find someone to blame, haven't you? But it's one of those things at the end, isn't it? You're screaming again for someone to make a bogey to keep your payout maximised up, but it doesn't happen, does it? There's a few...
Ricky was so close this week.
He was.
Let's see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Maybe a couple of bogeys too many. At 8 bogeys on the week. You shave that down a bit. And do you know what? We were giving out that he wasn't making enough putts. And for him, the ones that we'd expect him to make on Sunday, he missed. But then he made a lot later on.
That one on 16. That shoe hook, that was in and out, wasn't it? That one.
Yeah.
That was a painful one.
Yeah. Brutal. So... Did he just start a little bit too slow? Maybe. It's so hard. Like, he's a couple of putts away from being right there, one shot behind her.
I think the dynamics of the tournament, what you had there was DJ and Fowler they were quite a way back, weren't they, sort of entering 13, and they've probably just said, oh, we're out of this, and they just start playing golf then. And we know that Fowler's a chaser, and all of a sudden there's birdie, and that's what you can do on the back nine, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think at that point they didn't think that they were going to get close enough to win it, and all of a sudden it just frees the wheels, doesn't it?
Well, if you look at the winning score, 13 under, and if you wind it back to where everyone was standing on the 10th tee, how many players really had a chance there?
Fowler was at sevens, yeah, at that point. He was six behind.
But you know you can go that back nine, you can shoot six under around there. Mm. It's far from the outside the realms of possibility, because people do it week in, year in, year out. Survive 10, survive 11, and then just go full blown attack up to 16, and then see what you can do over the last couple of holes. You're talking bogeys. You mentioned a minute ago, up until the back nine, Francesco Molinari to have made just one bogey all week was incredible, absolutely incredible. I mean, eventually, you know, clearly got ground down by Tiger, and perhaps that was the, you know, whether it was Tiger who beat him or whether Francesco beat himself, up for debate, I guess. But
I thought Rich Beam's commentary on course was fascinating, and he was saying, wasn't he, I don't like this guy, as he's basically saying, this wind's getting up seriously. The wind's coming in.
Mm.
And he said, and he actually said in commentary, you're at a real disadvantage going first here because the other guys will just watch what happens.
Yeah.
And Frankie steps up and he makes the cardinal sin. He goes for the right side of the green.
Yeah.
And then Tiger walks up. He's not even looking at the pin. He's looking between the two bunkers. I'm going to bang it straight in there. Two putt, get out of here. And Tony does the same. Tony goes the other way as well. Goes for the pin. Double bogey city. I mean, that's just experience, isn't it? That's just nous of Augusta.
Yep.
And playing under the most intense pressure in the last group when the weather's getting gnarly. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I mean, another one who caught my eye, Justin Harding. I mean, for a guy who was outside the top 700 at the start of 2018. And playing on the Sunshine Tour, and for him to have, you know, the events that he's won, he's now got his maiden European Tour victory under his belt, and to come to Augusta and to be in the mix and to not fold the way he did, and to earn his spot for next year as well into the mix, I was thoroughly impressed with that. Really good stuff from Harding.
Yeah, that's something else. Knowing you need to make that birdie on 18 to get your invite for next year after having a bit of an up and down day on Sunday. It's really impressive.
Really good stuff from the guy. So yeah, his career's going to, you know, go from, on leaps and bounds now. He's not well inside. He's inside the top 50 in the world, and the world's his oyster. Well done, that
looks
man.
Like South Africa's got his neck. They've got their next elite golfer on their hands with Harding.
Quite possibly.
He's come out of the pack real sharp, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. And to say in the space of, what, 16 months, he's gone from, you know, oblivion on the Sunshine Tour to, I think he's won four or five events overall and into the world's top 50. Very.
There's been a few,
impressive.
Hasn't there? There's Brandon Stone, Fritelli. There's been quite a few of them, but all of a sudden, this Harding's just come from nowhere.
Yeah.
And for him to hang around at the top of that leaderboard was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Shows real guts, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. No, I was thoroughly impressed with the way he handled himself. Well, yeah, and the pressure told a bit on Sunday. But as Barry just said, for him to get into that top 12 position for next year through grit and determination at the end, very impressive.
Right. The PGA Tour moves on. It never stops, does it?
No.
We've got the RBC Heritage this week, which I always think is a good tournament, actually. For the tournament after the Masters.
Cracking field, isn't it?
It's a good field, yeah.
The course is so much fun as well. Yeah.
It's, I think you get a decent field here because you get your Royal Bank of Canada team having to turn up as part of their sponsorship deal.
Yeah.
Dustin Johnson being one of those. So yes, that helps, but bolster the top of the field. But there's actually some decent depth to it as well. And it's good to see, and we've been talking about this across quite a few podcasts this year, it's good to see a number of European Tour players taking advantage of this tournament. So, you know, the likes of your Pepperells, your Wallaces, your Rafa Cabrera-Bellos, your Matt Fitzpatrick. You know, they've clearly got a management team in it that says, well, actually, we think this course is going to suit you guys, so it's worth you staying on.
Yep.
You know, this is a stop that isn't a 7,900-yard par 72, typical American stock. You can actually, it's got European connotations to it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So I think that's good, because I think in the past, a lot of European Tour players have, you know, they've literally played the week before a major and they haven't really taken the scheduling seriously. That's another thing with Tommy, you know. Tommy tends to pick events that aren't the biggest events, but events that might suit his game.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Why put yourself at a disadvantage by attacking an event that doesn't suit? I mean, the scheduling of some players does beg a belief sometimes, that's to be said.
That is very true. Now, this golf course is a Pete Dye design. Harbour Town Golf Links. I say this every year. They say it's a golf links, but it isn't links golf. Actually, I think 15 of the holes are what I classify as Carolina. So very tight, tree line, dog legs. It's a genuine Carolina golf course. And then it just opens up 16, 17, 18. You're right on the coast. So that's worth bearing in mind. But effectively, what you do see from the winners here in Maine is that they are, you know, players that thrive on coastal golf courses play well here as well. Mm. You know, you've got a winners list here of Boo Weekly, Brian Gay, Boo Weekly, a two-time winner. Jim Furyk's won here twice. Branch Schnedeker plays well by the coast, as we know. He won here in 11. G-Mac in 13. Kuchar in 14. Brandon Grace, you know, you always look at Brandon when he's when you've got a tournament by the coast. He's got such a great coastal pedigree. The last two winners, though, have been a bit left field. Wesley Bryan in 2017. And last year, Satoshi Kodaira.
No, last year never happened.
Blank the pain from your memory, Barry. It was painful. Oh. I remember sitting, we were talking about it during the event, weren't we? I remember sitting, staring at a cash-out offer, which was a healthy four-figure number, and refusing it because I was convinced that Siwoo was going to win.
What was his lead?
I think he had a couple of shots, I think, at one point.
Two.
But it wasn't just that. It was the fact that he was playing so well from tee to green, and...
Mm-hmm. I read a tweet this morning saying he missed putts of 4, 5, 4, and 6 feet in the last four holes.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the one. Jeez. He's putting a bit better this year, though, isn't he?
He is. He's putting phenomenally well. For me, then, it's one of those old-style golf courses where lots of different styles can eventually bring you to the winner. One thing it doesn't suit are bombers. I think a little bit of accuracy off the tee works nicely. I mean, I'll just take you through the skill averages. Driving distance, 52nd. I mean, 52nd of the last nine winners if you're averaging them out. So, yeah, bombers, nah. Driving accuracy, 20th. That's a good number. Greens and regs, 17th. Proximity to hole, 12th. I do think there's something in people that can get the ball close because we've got tiny greens. They're the smallest greens on tour bar Pebble Beach.
Yep.
Scrambling, 7th. Putting average, as big as 20th. So it doesn't tend to be a putting competition. It tends to be a more of a short game, a proximity and a scrambling.
Well, those greens are so small, aren't they, that, you know, unless you're absolutely, you know, pinpoint precise with your approaches, you're going to be missing some greens and you need to be getting up and down. And you know, the scrambling numbers usually are quite high, you know, in the 60s and 70s. It doesn't look absolutely brutal when you review the numbers in terms of being on and around the greens, but you need to make those ups and downs. You can't be flagrantly making bogeys from those positions.
You know, I said in my preview that you can count the numbers of players that have hit more than 70% GIR here on like the finger of one hand.
Mm.
So you've got even the very best ball strikers on 17, 18 holes are going to be scrambling for their lives.
Yeah.
And the weather, have you seen the weather that's coming in?
Yeah, I'm looking at your preview. It looked like there was a mixed bag, to say the least.
Well, I think it's got worse. Thursday, 13 gust in 20. And that, for me, is the scoring day. And I think 20 around here, you can still see, you'll still see 65, 66s. It's Friday, this front moves in. At 8 o'clock in the morning, it's blowing up to 35 miles an hour.
Mm.
It then gets more intense, 25 to 40 by 11 o'clock. And then the thunderstorms arrive in the afternoon. So I don't know what's going to happen here. You can almost see a scenario where the PM-AM split have to play some of their round in the morning. And then this thunderstorm hits, and they're going to pull it. They'll basically cancel the rest of the round that day.
Yeah.
So there could be some horrendous, and I mean horrendous, bias in the actual split this week.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting here on a Tuesday morning looking at a weather forecast. Oh, I always throw that one in there. But if that comes to reality, it's one of those situations where would the PGA Tour, knowing what's coming in, can the whole day, or would they actually say, well, actually, boys, we're sorry, but you guys that are AM starters, you're going to have to play 3 hours in winds up to 40 mile an hour, but we know that by about 1 o'clock, we're going to be canning the day anyway.
Mm.
That almost smacks of unfair, but that's golf, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, but it's also, I mean, that weather could come in earlier, it could hang on and come in later. You know, it's still 3 days out. Things can change.
Saturday, no rain whatsoever, only 16 degrees, so very European. And it's blowing between 20 and 40 miles an hour all day.
It's going to keep the scoring down a little, isn't it?
Well, this is single-digit golf, mate. And then they're not coastal breezes either. They're inland breezes. They're coming from the west, which is interesting. It's not a sea breeze or sea wind. And then on Sunday, it comes down to you can see this being like the Alamo on Sunday. Probably a very soft golf course, and it's only blowing between 10 and 15 as the leaders go out. And the temperatures have warmed slightly to about 21 degrees. So not sweltering, but warmer. So for me, it's going to be all about survival.
Mm. Get your grinding boots on.
It's going to be a proper grind, this is. Where did you guys end up in terms of players? Are there particular price points you were interested in? Or how do you take it from a contender at Augusta? How are they going to cope the week after in RBC perspective?
I
have got some numbers to read out, by the way.
Yeah, you have the same dilemma after lots of these events, don't you? But I think there's two factors here. You've got the post-Masters issue with the guys who are truly in contention at the top of the market. And then you've got the fact that it is RBC sponsored and some of these guys are essentially going through the motions for their obligations to the sponsor, and that can put, I think it can make for a market that doesn't look as correct as it should be. I must say, when I went through this, there were a lot of names I wanted back or want to back, and I haven't backed them all yet, but it's there's a lot of players a little further down, and you know, you look at the likes of Dustin Johnson. He was clearly capable of winning this. Was he truly in the heat of battle on Sunday? No, but as Barry said, you know, it's just a very quiet, impressive finish in the end. Molinari, second favourite, 14-1. How deflated is he going to be coming into this event? You know, can he shrug all of that off immediately? That happened on the back nine on Sunday, and get his head straight, ready for this. I mean, the course suits undoubtedly, but
I'll read these out to you. 08 Weekly, 19th at the Masters. Gay didn't play. Furyk missed the cut. Snedeker was 15th at the Masters. Pettersson didn't play. G-Mac missed the cut at the Masters. Matt Kuchar is the exception. He was 5th in Augusta the week before he won this at 18-1. That was in 2014. 15, Furyk missed the cut. Brandon Gase, guess what? He missed the cut in 16. Wesley Bryan didn't play. And Satoshi Kodaira, and I remember you saying this, Paul, when you, if you looked at this from a world, an OWGR perspective last year, he was 250-1, and he's finished 28th the week before at the Masters.
Relative to his price, his OWGR ranking last year was way up there. So yeah, if you'd just ranked the field by OWGR and done no other analysis, just picking out names that were decent value, then his name would have popped up quite readily. Whether you'd have backed him on the strength of that alone is a completely different matter. But yeah, top 30 at Augusta wasn't bad either, was it? So there were a few clues there, I think.
I think there's going to be an element where some of the elite players are mentally tired. You know, Francesco could be one. Some are doing obligations. Yeah, got that. And then some are going to see it as a big opportunity. So it's deciphering that, and it's deciphering who's going to be really keen and seeing it as a huge opportunity when it's going to be blowing 30 miles an hour for much of the tournament, and who can cope with that. That's kind of where I got to.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to go with Xander if I felt that he was the kind of player who would want to lift his game again for this, but for me, he's the kind of player that he's going to focus his game and his efforts and his mental approach around the big events, and quite rightly, because he's got one of those in him quite soon. And his third favourite for this, I mean, he's a swerve for me, despite everything from last week. It is an interesting dilemma.
You get the feeling that Beth Page is going to play to his strengths, isn't it?
Mm. And these majors come around thick and fast now, don't they, with the new schedule? It's less than a month, I think, isn't it, until the PGA. So
yeah, you've got the RBC this week. You've got that ridiculous twin pair thing next week, and then you've got two good tournaments. One is Quail Hollow, which will be loaded, and then the week after that is that tournament they play at that new inland golf course at Dallas. The Byron Nelson, which actually was a really good course last year. So you may find quite a few players actually opt for that. I mean, a lot of players will have got two decisions to make, haven't they? It's whether they play the Byron Nelson the week before or they play Quail Hollow.
Yeah,
I would have thought most would play Quail Hollow.
That Trinity Forest was a beautiful great golf course. I cannot wait to see that again.
Yeah, that was the one Aaron Wise won, wasn't it?
Yeah, hopefully they make it a little bit tougher this year. They were very because it was such a difference in style to the regular type of PGA Tour course. They went very soft on them. So hopefully they dial it up a notch for them this year.
You may find that because that was such a visually attractive tournament, and you may find some of the bigger players will actually go and play that because they actually like the look of the golf course.
Mm.
I think it was a huge
and some guys,
a huge step into the unknown, as you said, Barry, last year.
And some guys want to play the week before a major. Yeah. You know, they want to tune their game up that way, and they're not comfortable with just having practice.
Take Dustin Johnson. He never plays the week before. He tends to pick and choose, doesn't he? But he'll always play St. Jude the week before the US Open.
Mm.
He never plays Quail Hollow, so you might find he plays the Byron Nelson this year.
Yeah, each to their own.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of where I'm at, grinders. And after the last few weeks where you get players in position and they kind of just fritter away their chance towards the end, I thought I'd actually go this week for some players that are proven winners. I don't know, it's bad, isn't it? You know, we'll see, won't we? But there's a lot of names there towards the top of the leaderboard, towards the top of the betting market, who aren't proven winners in my mind. So my first bet off the bat, my first gut reaction, and this is the first week, Paul, that I'm not using any statistics whatsoever to make my picks from.
Right, okay.
I'm basically now going back to how I used to bet when I actually used to be able to tip up some winners, which is just go off gut feel and just watching golf tournaments and just knowing in your mind what kind of courses suit what kind of players.
Yeah, sometimes you can get a bit blurred with the stats, particularly if you're scrubbing people out for, you know, tenuous reasons. And
because they're only 75th for bogey avoidance and they needed to be in the top 70.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, well, this is it. This is the kind of silly spot I've got myself into over the years. So I've gone for Jordan Spieth, who actually, I think, if you look at a finickety golf course, short golf course, Pete Dye design, someone that plays well when the weather's really crappy, I don't think Spieth's far away. And it was noticeable last week, after he'd blown his chance in the first nine holes. It was very similar performance to Matthew Fitzpatrick, who I know you two are going to mention later on. But just on the quiet side, once all the pressure had gone and he could just release his wheels, all of a sudden, he was in the top 20 for greens in regulation. And he just shot three very nice rounds of golf. And it, as we know, he sits number one in my 8-week putting average tracker. His putting's back to where it used to be.
Yeah.
It's a lot more confident. And when I listened to the No Laying Up podcast with him last week from a few weeks ago, he was basically saying how he's now basically, it's all about repetition with the swing. Getting that grounded into competition mode. And actually, I get the feeling that somewhere like this week where there's going to be no pressure, there's that nice, easy feel to it. Yeah, I just think this could be the tournament where he actually starts pulling things together. I also think he'd be a very good first-round leader punt because you look at him this year, fifth at Torrey Pines after round one, ninth at Pebble, second at the Genesis, sixth at the Texas Open. So he's 35-1 currently first round leader for this. I think there's worse bets out there as well. I think he could get a very fast start, take the confidence that he knows that he's starting to hit some greens in regulation. I just think 25-1, I was quite pleasantly surprised with that price point. So I went two each way, seven place each way with Sporting Bet.
Yeah, no, he certainly picked up after a slow first round, and it's probably the weight of my money on him being first round leader last week that dragged him down in the first round, and then recovered after that. But I can see your logic there, Stu.
It'd be interesting to see how Jordan reacts when he does find it might not be this week, but when he finally gets in contention, whether it's just going to be just as easy as pie.
Hmm. Yeah, so if the old thought process has come back, we know he's talented enough to do it. And as you say, his putting, which had kind of fallen away last year, has been far better lately. He's not bulletproof, and we see it sort of again last week. But
he said on the podcast, my putting is, I've got 100% confidence back in the putter. I've got no issues with the putter. Hmm. All I'm now focusing on is the tee to green game. The other thing that I think is a positive for Spieth is because this course is only 7,100 yards, there are two reachable par fives. I mean, one of the par fives is 500 yards. It's one of those golf courses where you don't have to put driver in your hands too often.
Yeah.
And that is his weakness. You know, he can still spray it.
Mm.
And if he's actually hitting fairway dry, you know, three wood or you know, fairway iron off the tee, or just a utility off the tee, that all of a sudden starts playing to Jordan Spieth's strengths.
Yeah.
A little bit like Luke List. You know Luke List? Luke List is a big bomber. But actually, you look at Luke List, he tends to go better on courses that are shorter, where he just bombs away with a utility or a three wood.
Yeah, keeps it in play. Dial it down a bit. Keep it in the short stuff off the tee and give yourself a chance.
So I'm with Spieth. Spieth at the top. I've also gone for our old, if you're talking grinding, if you're talking greens in regulation, grinding, and just someone that's going to just hang around, there's no one better in the field than Jim Furyk, is there? So he's the other guy I've took towards the top, at the very top. I've taken the 8 places on Fury at 30-1 after last week's heroics of putting everyone up 8 places and they finished 9th. But anyway, I've gone 1.25 points each way, 30-1. Jim Fury with Betfair Sportsbook.
Yeah, he's got a good chance, Jim.
This could play to his strengths and isn't going to be a putting contest, which is his weakness, yeah?
Mm. He's won twice around here as well, hasn't he? Clearly loves the track, doesn't he? I'm on Jim as well.
There's a little bit of 40-1 about him this morning.
Yeah, it looks
like... If you're prepared to take the 5.25.
Looks like that's just disappeared.
You could boost that up to, what, 45?
Yeah, that's all gone now. Just refreshed it just now. So, yeah, 33s is the best price you'll get with less places, as you say, or 30s with eight each way if you shop around a little bit. But yes... Yeah, I know. I like Jim. I'm on Jim myself. He was one of my early bets for the week.
14th at Pebble, 9th at PGA National, 2nd in Sawgrass, 18th in Copperhead. So you look, take the last three, 9th, 2nd, 18th, all on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass, which they're playing this week. So, yeah. 17-time winner on tour, Jim. And Jordan, I think, has got 11. So I've got 28 wins between the two.
Hoping to make it 29.
So you wait and see how they bottle it coming down the stretch, one of them. So that's where I'm at for the top of the market. Where are you at, Barry? Where's your first bet coming? Because Paul said, dear, he's on Jimbo.
I'm going to stick with Cantlay. You know, he got into the pressure cooker, but he was there for all of 3.4 seconds, and then
he heard my scream.
Ejected. Yeah. And then ejected hard right on to the 16th. Yeah.
You don't get away going up on that top tier. Say, no, was it a 5-footer he missed?
I'd say it was closer to 7 or 8 by the looks of it now. But still, he has a putt, he's 50-50 to make.
It didn't get to the hole, did it?
No, it shouldn't. It wasn't great. And then, yeah, another poor shot on 17 and the goodbye. So he won't have, he'll have had a taste of the pressure, but won't have been overcooked in it. So he's got a great record here the last two times he's played. He's a 3rd and a 7th. So clearly playing very well. You know, good for greens and regulation last week.
He was like, when I was checking the scores on Friday, he was still 2-2 over at one point. And then all of a sudden it just clicked, didn't it? Mm. And he just started flying through the field.
Yeah. I think he might have been the low man on the weekend. Yeah, I haven't done the calculations,
very,
but 64, 68.
Yeah, very close.
So,
yeah. If he keeps that going, he's a danger because he's got 2 top tens in 2 appearances, isn't he? Here.
Yes. So I'm sticking with him. See what happens and. I don't know why. I mean, I'm just a glutton for punishment, but back on Siwoo this week.
It's a tough one to leave him out, isn't it? I've got a little bit on Siwoo myself, just to satisfy my own curiosity. That
I think you just have to back Siwoo, don't you, on Bermuda grass? Because you know that the week you don't back him, he'll win. So I've backed him as well. So you're absolutely screwed. He'll miss the cut.
That's all 3 of us on him then.
Literally, I could have sat here yesterday and tossed the coin between Siwoo and Sung Jae. What one do you take? And I've plumped for Siwoo in the end. Because he is putting very, very well, Siwoo Kim. And actually, he finished, I think, in exactly the same spot that he finished last year at the Masters, 24th.
Yep.
Now you're not getting 100-1 this year, unfortunately, which was his price last year. But it's just kind of it's almost like he played very, very well at the Valero, didn't he? 54 hole leader, and then he just sort of treaded water in the final round. But yeah, he's a very good win player as well. Sits in the top 20 on our predictor model for win.
Yeah, there's lots to like with Siwoo. If you can put last year's lack of conversion out of your mind, but I think you have to be brutal with golf betting sometimes and just go with your gut.
What do you two make of Sung Jae?
Oh, massive talent. He'll win. I mean, his price tends to be verging on you know, too short, particularly in this kind of field. But was he 45s this week, 50, that kind of bracket? Getting more backable, isn't it?
Do you need any course experience around here?
No, Satoshi Kodaira won. Saying that, to be fair, Satoshi Kodaira didn't win when it was blowing 40 miles an hour. And that's my kind of downside on Sung Jae-im. Because I haven't got anything. I know, yes, clearly he's only been on the PGA Tour, 6 months? There was nothing that I could find that suggests. So, I don't know. It's that element, isn't it? When it really gets tough and it gets proper gnarly. You know, is a tour rookie going to hang about? But, you know, tour rookie's a little bit unfair for him, really, because he's such a precocious talent. And there's this ridiculously strong link between Copperhead and here. I've put it in my... that 7 of the last 10 winners here had previously finished in the top 10 at Copperhead. And if you throw in Brandon Grace, who went on to finish in the top 10 at Copperhead, that's 8 out of 10. Now, that's an amazingly strong link.
Mm.
And if you look at Sung Jae-im so far this year, look, I'm almost talking myself into why the hell I didn't back him. 12th at PGA West, which is Pete Dye Design. He was 3rd at Bay Hill on Tiff Eagle Bermuda Grass. And last time out on Tiff Eagle, at Copperhead, he was 4th. Bit of a calling card there.
Mm.
But this is it. I don't know. So, yeah, I'll just take you through the top 10 of of our win players on the predictor. Dustin Johnson won. Dustin Johnson and Spieth are tied. 3 is Kuchar. 4 is Hoffman. 5, Russell Henley. 6, Charles Howard III. 7, Zach Johnson. 8 is Luke List. 9 is Mark Leishman, who I thought was big at 50s. And 10 is Russell Knox. They're the top 10 in our predictor model, again, for win play. Siwoo Kim is 17th. We're tied with Benny Ann, who's a very good win player. There you go. So, I don't know. That's where I was at. It was either Siwoo, who I tip and miss his cut, or it would have been Sung Jae. So, I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah, well, we'll all be in the same boat, either elated or screaming on Sunday or Friday. Depends how far he gets us, I guess.
I'll be by the swimming pool watching him miss the cut, so it won't be all bad for me. So that's not too bad. That's why I'm looking at it. Right, who else you two gone for? In fact, Paul, no, you tell me, because you said there were a whole host of players you could have backed. So go on.
The first one I have backed, and the first person I backed this week was Matt Fitzpatrick, who shone out to me last week. Again, after a slow start, he opened with 78 and then ended up finishing 21st. His final three rounds, 205, was exactly the same as Tiger Woods. So
it was a miracle he made the cut.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He showed some real guile, some real want to be there for the weekend and did that. And 21st overall, I thought was really impressive after such a poor opening round. And we see it quite a bit with Matt. I don't know what he does on a Wednesday to cause his Thursday rounds to be generally so poor. But when he gets away and to a decent start, he can have a decent event. I mean, he was 2nd at the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill. A few weeks back, 2nd for scrambling that week, you know, and again from a decent start. If he starts slowly, forget it. If he starts well, he's going to be right up there, I think. This track, he said quite vocally, this is his favourite track in the world. 23rd here in 2014, 14th here last year. So he's got some decent enough form on this track, but I think the way that he performed last week for the final three rounds will give him a decent bit of impetus coming into this. And if you're talking about Tiff Eagle Bermuda Greens, he won at the Earth Course back in, 2016, I think it was.
Yeah.
There's lots to like with Matt. I picked him up at 50s nice and early. He's been chopped in a little bit since then. But I think he's got a decent chance. But if you want some of the names that I haven't backed, who I think are well worth a look, Jason Kokrak at 50-1. I think he's got a decent chance. He's been playing some lovely stuff, hasn't he? Ryan Moore at 50-1. 16th last year. If you, one of the corollary courses you talked about was Sedgefield, and he's won at Sedgefield Ryan Walk.
Yeah, he's good at Copperhead as well.
Yeah, yeah, good at Copperhead. Got a couple of top tens at Quail Hollow, which you mentioned as well. He's made the cut twice at Pinehurst when he's played it in some decent fields. 16th last year, 9th going into the final round. There's lots to like with Ryan Moore. I still haven't decided not to back him. I may well do that. Longer prices, Kevin Streelman, Kevin Nahr, Jonathan Bird even. They're all three-figure prices. Scott Stallings. There's lots here that I could include. I'll probably reserve a few of them for my DraftKings teams, which looks like there's going to be quite a few of them this year, this week. Talking DraftKings, Luke Donald as well. He's one that stands out given his course form here, and he's shown a little bit of form in the last few weeks as well. Denny McCarthy's another one who's a bit out of kilter with his DraftKings price, in my opinion, versus his outright odds as well. But yeah, I've got a couple of long shots which I'll do in a few minutes once we've heard from Barry. But yeah, Matt, other than Jim Furyk and Siwu, Matt Fitzpatrick's the only one I've backed at mid-range prices right now. I need to stop because I can't back six or seven or eight players this week because it's not going to work.
It's the only way you get a winner.
Back off the field. To be honest, I could sit here and back 12 or 15 right now, and that's never going to work. So I need to trim it down. But yeah, that's where I am.
I backed Fitzy as well.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he?
It just made so much sense. And when you said it, it kind of just triggered it. And like, it was very impressive going from that almost guaranteed miss cut after Thursday to doing what he did. So, yeah, not much more to say about that.
I think Ryan Moore could be a very good shout.
Yeah, there's lots to like.
Moore's a grinder, isn't he?
Mm. He's lost a lot.
Saying that, he tends to win tournaments at like 22 under, doesn't he? But he's got everything that you'd need. He's accurate, good win player.
I think the thing that really stands out to me is those corollary courses and his performances there. There's lots of pointers and clues that Ryan Moore will go well this week.
I think you could be very right. I've gone for two more. I think Eddie Pepperell might have a good week.
Yeah.
Very good coastal golf course player, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a lot to like with Eddie. He's stepped up his game. He's at a different level to where he has been right now.
He reminds me a little bit, not that his price is anywhere as big, but he's a little bit like Satoshi Kodaira last year. He's the kind of, if you rank this by golf, official world golf ranking, he'd be in the top 15 in the field.
Mm.
And then you look, he's ensconced at 100-1 with a lot of firms.
Yeah.
Which is a bit derogatory. And also, if you look at Eddie, he's never going to be one of these guys that the DraftKings fraternity in America are going to like. He's never going to pop from many models.
No.
Because his statistics are all over the place. I don't think he knows how he's going to play from one day to the next. When you listen to him and when you read his blogs.
He could be playing awfully and then he'll turn up on a Wednesday and knock it about on the range and think, yeah. Oh, this feels all right.
It's like at the Players. Before that, he said he was playing at golf course like a sort of 18 handicapper. And then all of a sudden, as he found a good feeling on the range on the Thursday, he's like, oh, aye. And straight away, it just come. I don't think he knows.
I think it's the same at Walton Heath, where I vaguely remember his pro-am partner from Wednesday mentioning after he won and said, you know, I played the pro-am with you on Wednesday and you were dog awful and you've just won the tournament. Yeah. And how can you make that much of an improvement from Wednesday to Thursday through Sunday to beat a decent field? It's madness.
I mean, you know far more about Eddie Pepperell than I do, but the only things that came just jumping off the page for me, fourth and first at Qatar, which, as we know, works very nicely from a Lynx goal. You know, Brandon Grace is a two-time winner, won this. You just know that there's a huge correlation between Qatar and the Open Championship.
Yeah.
Pepperell last year at the Open, when that was at its nastiest and its... Yeah. He was the one that shot 65 in the final round to grab a top six in the worst of the wind, like blowing 30 plus.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting as well. You think of that, because that was the tournament that Kevin Kisner, who is a bit of a Harbour Town specialist, he was leading that for 54 holes. Kisner. So you just think, okay. And you just look at his record. I mean, great record at the KLM Open, both Kenema and the Dutch courses. Anywhere where he gets a sniff of the sea, you know, second at Royal County Down. That was a playoff that they qualified for the playoff at 2 under par that year, the Irish Open at Royal County Down.
Mm.
It was an absolute, yeah, it was just proper hardcore Lynx golf. Fourth at Geleen, second at Geleen last year. He just, and then that, even that win at Walton Heath, you and I went there. Very Lynx-y feel. It was cold. It was blustery. It was windswept. And he won that at a canter, really, didn't
he? Yeah, no, he was impressive.
I just think, you know, stress, 51st. Mark, Augusta's never going to suit Eddie Pepperell. But even if you go back to the players, that was cold. It was a little bit windy. It was kind of a UK feel to it. And he just pops up with third place. The other thing I did note here, the last two winners of this, both Kadira and Wesley Bryan, were ensconced in the top five of my roll in putting number. And if I look at this week's rolling putting average number for 8 weeks, I have Jordan Spieth at one and Eddie Pepperell is at three or four. So if it does come down to someone that's got an immensely sharp short game, because they're all hit, you know, if any players are around a 65% GIR and it comes down to scrambling and putting, Pepperell's going to be there or thereabouts, I think. Also, fourth last week for driving accuracy. Didn't get it out there very far, but clearly he was banging that 3-wood out there, 285, 290, and he was fourth for driving accuracy at Augusta. Which, again, bodes well for this week. The other one, who I couldn't resist, is Patton Kizzire, who, he was top 20 last week at the Masters.
Yeah, that was good effort for him.
He was another one that just hung around pretty much all week. And you just think, well, Patton's going to shoot 79 at some point and disappear. Well, he didn't. Tons of GIR last week, a winner at the OHL Classic in 17, 2018 Sony Open winner. 15th at Sea Island, 8th at Kapalua, 13th at Wailea. There is his three best finishes this year, all by the sea. And when this was a really tough tournament in 2016, again, the wind was blowing hard the year Brandon Grace won, he shot 69, 68, 71 to be fourth after 54 holes that year. Jason Kograg was up there that year, by the way, as well. And that ties into what you said earlier, Paul, about Kokrag. The thing with Kokrag is, in after a week when you've had Ricky Fowler and Cantlay sort of spill their guts, I just wonder what Jason Kograg's going to do on 16, 17 and 18 coming home when he's leading.
Yeah, he's give yourself a little bit of respite now again.
He could do a Siwoo, couldn't he, Kokrag, from last year?
He's getting closer. He's getting much, much closer. But yeah, I can see... See why it kind of puts you off a little bit.
So yeah, Kizzire knows how to win. He's a good win player. In fact, you know, he's Sea Island resident, loves playing by the sea. I just thought he could take that on from last week and actually build something this week. So Kizzire, Pepperell, Siwoo Kim, Furyk and Spieth. They're the five that I've put against the field this week at the RBC. Who are your long, long shots then, Paul?
The other two I've backed are Ryan Armour, who I like here. He's a decent tee to green player. What caught my eye is that he led the field for scrambling at the Valspar. Again, you're talking about corollary courses. Nearly 80% up and down. And he finished sixth there, didn't he? He's finished 12th at the Honda as well this season. So, again, some decent Tiff Eagle, Bermuda form coming into this. 57th from his last start at the Valero Texas Open, but he still hit 70% of scrambling, so that was good. Fourth and eighth at Sedgefield over the last couple of years, again in terms of your corollary courses. Won Sanderson Farms on Bermuda. There's again looking at Bermuda links. The only thing when you look at his raw stats that kind of puts you off is the fact that his three finishes here are 66, 46. And they were for a long time ago. and then 55th last year. But generally, he was struggling this time last year. He only had a single top 10 in the year.
Yeah. You've got to put those in context, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Whereas this year, he's finished 12th at the Honda, as I say. He was 6th going into the Sunday. He was 6th at the Valspa. And I thought 225-1 for Ryan Armour was a chance worth taking. And the final one is completely left field. But he's the kind of player that I think can and does pop up every now and again from absolutely no form whatsoever. Twice a winner on the PGA Tour. And when he's won his last two, or those two events, he's come from form of miscut 73 for his last win. And his first win was miscut 51st.
Oh, I know who this is. That's how anal I am. I know you're going to tip up. You are tipping up Ted Potter Jr.
Absolutely.
How do I guess that from form? That is bad, isn't it? Yeah, Ted Potter Jr. He popped up a couple of weeks ago on a leaderboard for didn't he?
He did.
He did, yeah.
His headline form is miscut 64th, miscut 77th. So it's very much in line with the form that he's shown when he's won before. You're right. He opened with 68 in Texas. He was two off the lead after the first round. So his name was there. He drifted away. He missed the second cut going into Sunday, so he didn't make the final day. But for me, these shorter tracks suit him far better than some of the other tracks he's been playing. He's got a top 20 at Copperhead to his name. His form here, 35th, 18th, 16th. He was fourth going into the weekend here in 2014. He opened with a slack 72 last year and recovered for his final three rounds to finish 16th overall. And Ted Potter Jr., you're talking about a player who we know can win. There's a lot of non-winners. Oh, yeah. There's not a lot of non-winners in this field. Ted Potter's capable every now and again of getting over the line. And I took him at 700-1 on the exchange to win this week. To satisfy my curiosity.
700-1. You know, you're not holding back there, are we, at each wet? Yeah, he's actually gone a bit blue on the exchange. He's down to 620 apparently.
Is he? He's been back to people are piling into Ted Potter.
I can see Potter, you know. Yeah. He is the sort.
I've been waiting for a week that fits him, and he's a mad price and he's got absolutely no form coming in.
No, but that means Jack.
It does mean absolutely nothing with Ted Potter Jr. So, yeah, I'm happy to take a chance at 700s. That's a chance I will happily take. Any bombs from you, Barry?
Just looking through the combo of form and course form. And it's surprising that I hadn't even noticed his results until now, but Jonas Blixt.
Yeah, he's playing better.
Not long.
Do you know the thing with Jonas as well? He's actually finding some greens in regulation, which for a putter, he's a pure putter, Blixt. Mm. He's a danger. The only thing that puts me off Blixt is Bermuda, but yes. Has he played well here?
He's had a 44th in 2017 and 14th, then 14th last year. So, you know, there's enough there about him and he can grind it out. He's got that kind of battling quality about his personality. Yeah. So I just thought 175-1, 8 places, throw a couple of pennies on it and for a bomb bet. It's the kind of tournament that you feel like you need one of those super long ones on board just for fun.
Yeah, Blixt is interesting. He's playing better. He's definitely playing better, Blixt.
He's won on Bermuda before.
He won. He won that pairs event like a couple of years ago with Cameron Smith.
That's what
Louisiana
counts for him. Okay,
that's it. That's
he was only doing half the putts.
Yeah.
Okay, only half the putts. Oh well.
But I think he's one for podcast listeners and for all of us to actually bear in mind for potentially when we go more upstate to Bent Grass later on in the year. Because if he's still bubbling under at those big prices, he's going to pop somewhere. Mm. Could be this week.
Maybe this
week. Could be this week, yeah.
You never know.
That's why he's that price. Right, we've overrun, but who cares? We've had a good time. We've blown away those Masters blues. Right, no podcast next week because I'm away on holiday. We will be back for. You've got actually got an event coming up, Paul. What event you got?
I've got the Hassan Dur Trophy in Morocco next week. Actually, an event I really enjoy. So
maybe you should do a podcast with Barry with me on holiday. You're more than welcome.
Complicating fact is that it'll be out on Easter Monday, odds permitting. So
not good.
No, we'll see how it all works next week. But yeah, in all likelihood, I think we'll be back the following week with those events that week.
I would like to say thank you to the PGA Tour for giving me an Easter off. It's absolutely much welcomed. Off to Spain we go.
Have fun.
I will do my best. Lovely. My son's going to run me ragged around the swimming pool for 7 days, but I'm looking forward to it. Right, thank you, chaps, for your time.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
Most appreciated. Best of luck to you guys.
Cheers, everyone.
And
thanks for listening.
Yes. Well, did you record viewers and listeners last week, which was very good. I should thank everyone for that because the amount of the content that we're putting up and the amount of listeners and the amount of viewers we're getting, it's just phenomenal. Absolutely brilliant stuff. Thank you to one and all, and we'll be back again very soon. Bye-bye.